greetings. I'm your host, James Gillen, and we've got another great show. I wanted to give you a little heads up on quite a few things. One is that we are going through a massive transition now. The solar flares are coming in. The solar cycle 24 is going to go up till probably 2014. They say it's going to peak in 13. So we're still under the gun there. And we're getting bombarded with huge magnetic influences from galactic plane. Other sources of gamma rays are coming in. The cosmic ray index is off the scale. So basically, we're in for a huge shift. And talking about that shift, I want to talk a little bit about Armageddon. You know, Armageddon just means the great uncovering, where everything just comes up to the surface. And that's basically what we're seeing today. And I wanted to cover some of the things that are happening today. You know, we have the LIBOR scandal and the UBS and Barclays banks all, you know, cooking their books and pulling all kinds of stunts. You know, we have the HSBC doing, you know, laundering money for the drug kingpins and rogue nations, Al-Qaeda. And then we got Standard, you know, being fined. I think Standard was known for processing $250 billion through their system. You know, it's... there's all these deals that are going on that are brokered through these banks, and it's all coming to the surface. And I know this Christopher Stevens, the ambassador over at Benghazi that was pretty much taken out, was actually, you know, dealing with some of these programs. And so that seems a little weird. And right when everybody wants to know how come he was not, taken care of, how come he wasn't protected, how come he was just left there to die with the military and the Marines there to protect him? How come nobody acted? Well, I think nobody wanted to see that their hands were in the cookie jar or wanted to get involved in that one. So anyway, a lot of arms have been going to with Fast and Furious to Mexico, and then there's arms going to the Al-Qaeda group, you know, after they take over Libya and things like that. Whose flag are they flying? Al-Qaeda. So come on, we got to figure this one out, folks. It's getting a little crazy. But this is all going to tie in together. So all this is coming to the surface. And all the big international banks, everybody are all being exposed. There's this massive derivative bubble about ready to burst where all these junk bonds and things were sold. So what do? They all bail out and they get this huge, $16 trillion bailout and then some and take off. And none of these guys are being prosecuted. Nothing's happening, you know. So basically what this is, wait a second, you know, we need a big diversion here because, you know, everybody's looking at this and we got to have them look somewhere else. You know, so we need an Aurora situation or we need a Sandy Hook situation. We need something like that. Now, what's weird is, you know, with 911, if you go to Veterans Today, you'll see clips on all of this that give all this information out. You know, FEMA was there before 911 happened the day before, and they're all set up and ready to go. There was a drill going on with a subway bombing at the exact same time. I believe there was one in Aurora. I haven't been able to confirm that, but there was a drill going on, a FEMA drill, right next door to Sandy Hook. Now somebody has a crystal ball in FEMA, and they have trained psychics, or there's something else going on. There's a bigger picture. You put all this together, and you have to look at this from the big picture. You're never going to understand this, or you're just going to be led emotionally down these train wrecks that go nowhere. And so there's a bigger picture going on. Now, the things about Sandy Hook, there's a couple things I just really need to talk about. One is that, you know, the drill was going on at the same time. United Way had their site up, you know, for the benefit, benefit site for Sandy Hook on the 11th. And this thing happened on the 14th. One of the victims' Facebook pages was up on the 9th, this is crazy. I can go over and over with these things. This one guy, Robbie Parker, on the day his daughter was murdered, he was putting up a Facebook page asking for money. And when they had him testify on TV, he was smirking and laughing. And when you realize the camera's on him, all of a sudden he broke into this crying and sad, and he's an actor, basically. You know, two of the guys on there were known actors, you know, that they were covering. They were giving the story about Sandy Hook. So, you know, a lot of this stuff just isn't added up. You know, one, the nurse said that that the mother there that was killed, they said that she was a teacher, and she's not a teacher. And she wasn't a teacher there at all. You know, Adam Lanza was on psychotropic drugs. Go figure. You know, all these shooters have a major drug connection. You know, that they're almost all on psychotropic drugs, some kind of drug. They call them SSRIs or whatever. A lot of different names. There's four handguns found in the school, only handguns, nothing else. But the medical examiner said all the kids were killed with an AR-15. And his AR-15 was found in his trunk in the car. It wasn't even taken inside. So wait a second, man. How can the medical examiner say all the kids were killed with an AR-15, but there's no AR-15 on site, and Adam Lanza, the supposed shooter of all these people, his was in the trunk. You know, this is all news. It's on the news. You know, and then the police reports you hear, there's two people running past the gym in dark clothing, and there's one down in custody inside, you know, one dead on the ground, and then one out in the woods down that they had handcuffed. And in this story, they had another one handcuffed on the ground by the fire station. Where did all these people go? You know, I'm going, where did all these people they had down and handcuffed go? There's no mention of them. They just vanished off the face of the earth. And the other one, what just blows me away, was seeing the daughter that was shot, you know, Robbie Parker's daughter shot, you know, a few days later, sitting on Obama's lap with the exact same dress on. The exact same. The whole family was there for a photo shoot, and the same girl that was supposed to be shot was actually sitting on his lap, you know, after the shooting. So this is all on Veterans Today. If you want to go to that website and watch this, these videos, I mean, it's very compelling that, I smell rotten fish, basically. And I just wanted to get that out there. So a lot of people are sending me nasty emails saying, why aren't you for gun control? You know, why aren't you getting rid of all the guns and everything else? You know, I said, because I know the big picture. I know what the plan is, you know. And when you know the big picture, you'll see that everything ties into it. The chemtrails, the fluoride in the water, you know, the banksters pilfering all the money and splitting and letting everything collapse. You know, the whole program, when you understand the big picture, then you can see how this stuff fits into it. And then you see who's really behind it. So I'm not going to be a part of that program. And I'm not going to participate in that program to take everybody's guns away. And I was raised in a family. My grandfather was the head of the fish and game in New Mexico. And we were hunting all our life. I kind of evolved out of it. I don't really hunt anymore. But I still believe that the Second Amendment is there for a reason. And that's one of the only things holding these international banksters and their puppets from actually throwing us all into total slavery. So anyway, that being said, I mean, that's what I feel about it. It just makes no sense whatsoever, this whole thing. And it just seems like one big diversion. And there's a lot of people being led down that emotional path and getting all fired up around this and blaming guns for all these things. And it's really, you really look at it and it's the drug companies, you know, the big pharma has a big role to play in this with all these psychotropic drugs. That's not being mentioned. It's a total failure of our society. You know, the poverty levels, you know, people, you know, crime increases when you have poverty. And one of the biggest deterrents for crime over and over and over again, as the statistics show, is that armed people, you know, good citizens that are armed, the crime rate goes down. You know, all of these major events came down in gun-free zones and states that have the highest, you know, the hardest, strictest gun laws. Like Chicago, you can't even have small arms there, firearms and things like that. They have the strictest gun laws and they have the highest deaths there. You know, so I mean, what are we, you know, the numbers don't lie, basically. And And I love that deal where they ask people, will you put a sign up on your front yard that says, you know, this is a gun-free zone, no arms here. And, and all these people that were for getting rid of all the guns, they wouldn't put a sign on their lawn. And so that tells you something, you know, if you really believe in your walk and your talk, then put a sign on your gun. You know, I have no arms. There's no guns here. And why wouldn't they put it? Because it's an open invitation for anybody to come in with no resistance and do harm to their family or steal their goods. So anyway, that's my take on the whole thing. And, I wish we were in a utopian world where we could totally trust our government and there wasn't a need for any firearms. And, we could all eat vegetables and sing Kumbaya and hold hands, but we're just not in that world yet, you know? And so until we get there, I'm going to keep my firearms. That's just the way it is. But anyway, those are some of the things I just wanted to cover, you know, my take on that. Do your own research. Go to Veterans Today. Look at those videos. It's very clear. This is not what it seems to be. It is a lot more behind this than you think. And there's just too many things that are just beyond ridiculous when you see the official story, just like on most of the official stories. But anyway, that being said, I want to get into some other things here. We've got a couple good, great guests here. We've got Spencer Barclay and Nate's with us too as well. And we're going to talk about, I don't know what we're going to talk about. We might be talking about divine providence or we might be talking about, I'd love to get your guys' take if you want to say anything about what your feelings are about the Second Amendment and even the Constitution on how that applies to us concerning whether or not you're under common law or a slave, you might say.
Spence.
Yo.
I'm going to pass that to you, dude.
Hey, can I take that right after a comment about the banks? You said something about bankers kind of not being under control.
Yeah.
Can I comment on that first?
Yeah, you can do whatever you want.
There was a guy, he's a journalist. His name's Matt Taibbi, I think is how you pronounce his name. And he was talking about HSBC and their money laundering billions of dollars in for drug cartels.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they got caught at it. And he said, I think somebody should have gone to jail. He said, but he said, I can guarantee you right now there's somebody in night court here in New York City who's going to get a tougher fine for peeing in an alley than anybody got at HSBC for laundering that money.
Uh-huh.
And he's right. But there's a real nuts and bolts way to predict that. And there is a maxim of law that's the debtor is subservient to the creditor.
Uh-huh.
And another way to say that is the borrower is the slave to the creditor.
Yeah, yeah.
The United States borrows its money from central banks, and banks like HSBC are just members of that cartel. So they literally are the slave to the creditor. They're the servant in a master and servant relationship. The United States declared bankruptcy on the Senate floor in 1933,
mm-hmm.
And so right there, the debtor is subservient to the creditor. The United States cannot oversee banks and their shenanigans because they don't have jurisdiction to do it. It's more than just sort of a philosophical thing. I think people are kind of surprised about that.
So what are these little fines that they pay? I mean, it's probably like maybe 2 days' earnings or a month's earnings, you know?
Oh, I'm sure they get together and they agree behind the scenes what's the best window dressing for the news story, so that people think that something's done. If it was absolutely nothing, that would be too big of a lie to cover. And mm-hmm. So that threshold of fine is probably just the best, the lowest window dressing that they think they could get away with.
Yeah, that's exactly my take. Going further in that, the Constitution, where people believe that they have constitutional rights, And they try to stand on their constitutional rights in the courts, and they're just like run over. I'd love for you to talk about that to help people understand that the position that they're in they don't have those rights. They have to take a whole different position.
Yeah, they don't just have them inherently. The Constitution was designed as a restraining mechanism for the government. So it's something that binds the government, not gives the folks on the other side freedom. And so that thing was designed around the republic or the de jure government. And so what they kind of did craftily over a bunch of time, you know, kind of starting around or putting it into high gear around the time of Lincoln, was they started to transition over into a de facto government, or in other words, a corporation, and that is the democracy. Mm-hmm. And that's all corporate law. And so that's what's being enforced in the courts. And so that's why they don't have jurisdiction to recognize what people would say as constitutional rights. And so that's such a big world, the corporate law and statutory regulation, that the best way to go about that, or one way to look at it, is just don't go through the door into it. If you just never enter corporate law or the statutory world or the democracy or the de facto, I'm using a bunch of different words for the same thing, mm-hmm. To help some folks maybe have some triangulation. That is a lot more sound logic than getting into it and then fighting and bellyaching about whether or not you have rights once you're in there.
Yeah.
And so...
And maybe you can explain to people that the difference between their all caps name, which is the fiction or part of the corporation, versus their name in all lower caps.
At law, yeah.
As a beneficiary.
Yeah, let me give a little setup for that. A statute, statutory law, a statute is a rule of society given the force of law. Mm-hmm. And a society is a number of people joined together by mutual consent to deliberate, determine, and act for a common goal. And so if you don't want to be a part of a particular society, that's your own free will, and that's the right of self-determination. Mm-hmm. And so what the society of the United States, which is not only is it a corporation, but they tell you that. If you want to look up 28 USC 3002, it just says the United States means a federal corporation. So if you don't want to be a part of that society that compels you to the point of forcing you to regulate what guns you own, you have to think again in a lot bigger picture. That's, you know, the words that you were using just a few minutes ago. Just look at it from a little bigger picture, and let's just not be a member of that group. It's just that simple. Now, it doesn't mean that group doesn't want to tug you back in with every fiber of their might, but it's there to be had. And so now, instead of a lot of times people use the word society and community interchangeably, but they're quite different. You can have several societies all in your local community, and then you just set up your own rules and regulations.
Yeah.
You know, can I read you a direct quote from Theodore Roosevelt that I think is directly relevant to this?
Sure. Yeah.
He says, "It behooves us to remember that men can never escape being governed. They either must govern themselves, or they have to submit to being governed by others." And so it goes on from there. He says that in the Jamestown, of all places, Jamestown Exposition, April 26, 1907. We must govern ourselves or submit to being governed by others. And that's what he's talking about. If you don't know what you're doing, the democracy will just suck you in. But yeah. But if you can stand on your own two feet and govern yourself, fine. But you don't have to submit to it. It's not a foregone conclusion that statutory regulations cover you. And just a quick way to double check it and look at it is IRS regulations don't apply to people who live in Australia, and that never interact with the U.S. at all. And so that might be a way to kind of look at it from the broadest perspective. You know, someone from Argentina isn't held to I don't know, local statutes or ordinances.
You know, so that's, you become your own nation and not part of their nation, you might say, yeah. Or their corporation.
Yeah, nation and society is absolutely interchangeable.
Mm-hmm.
But country is not. Country is more like the community, and that's the geography around. And so there's a little bit to maybe starting to differentiate. And once you get once you scratch the surface just a little bit, there's a lot of really interesting information that can unfold.
You know, I know both of you attended that workshop at the with the Divine Province. You know, maybe Nate can talk a little bit. Both of you can chime in and talk a little bit about the Divine Province and as maybe a solution to some of this.
Yeah.
Okay. How about I'll take it from the beginning. So Spence and I went on a research trip recently down to Sacramento to check out the Divine Province crew and a seminar that was going on down there. later on, you're going to be running for the second hour a show with a gentleman that we met down there, John. What's his last? How do you pronounce his last name? Johnny Raffalino.
Raffalino, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. He presented down there, and some really interesting stuff that's going on with that. Maybe that's what Divine Province is and all that. That's completely a whole nother show in itself, and we're looking at setting that up with the Postmaster General, or maybe with the Deputy Postmaster General. But they're definitely looking into some very interesting remedies regarding an international diplomatic status, and that being used as a tool to achieve peaceful remedy, or at least a great tool to be able to go to your brother in peace that you have a problem with. And so that's one little announcement to make, I guess, is that that's one thing that we've got in the bag of tools for James and the ranch. You recently got your diplomatic IDs in the mail. The land patent for the ranch has recently been finished, and we're still kind of fine-tuning a couple of details on that. But so you're in a real good position. I don't know if you've recently made any statements about the next round of court cases. It's supposed to be coming up on February 5th at Goldendale Superior Court. And James is going to get an opportunity to step up to the plate there again. And I'm kind of getting off track, but anyway, back to the DP. We hung out with a number of interesting folks, got to talk to a lot of very well-educated folks down there. And networked with some interesting people. One of the things that Spence realized kind of about DP was like, okay, the Postmaster General himself would admit like, hey, this is not a bulletproof system. This is just another tool for you to have in your bag. And that ultimately it all comes down to our own self-responsibility. But that it was a useful tool and useful claim to stand on, if people know what that means. And in starting to look into being more self-reliant and achieving legal freedom, one of the common themes that we've looked at from a number of different people that are well respected in the field that we may look at their research, a common theme that comes up is that you're always going to be given a counteroffer to abandon your claim. So whatever your claim is, how good can you stand on it? And maybe Spence has a couple of things to say about that. I don't know. Do you want to chime in, Spence?
Yeah, sure. As for claim to stand on is kind of like if you're challenged and someone says that they could say something as simple as this paperwork isn't any good. This doesn't have any legal meaning. It's a lot of times those are just offers to see if you crumble under that pressure, or maybe that's not the intent. Maybe their intent really is to get you to crumble.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But those offers and that negotiation is fluid and it's dynamic, and there's ways to, you know, stay out of conflict, stay out of argument, and shift the burden back over. Maybe you say, well, fine. Oh, what is the defect that you found in it? You see, there's always ways to shift it back over, not engage in conflict, and those are that's a skill set in and of itself. But
what if they were to say, oh, there's all kinds of defects. This isn't even applicable. I don't know why you're giving me this paper. It's just all a bunch of internet gobbledygook.
Yeah, well, there's a maxim of law that says fraud lies hid in general expressions, and so you might even quote that direct quote to him and say, well, and so that would appear to me to be some just general concepts, and so I'm sure you can point out some specifics here. Can you give me some of these specifics that you have in mind?
Yeah.
I've had to do that before.
Yeah. Now what if these people, and what we've been dealing with is you know, just to give people a short heads up on what this is about, but basic is about some small code compliance things that actually are all up to code, but it's just trying to find a way to close the ranch down. They've been doing it for years. It's been over a 2-year process. And everything's in order. Everything's up to code. You know, all the septic tanks are inspected, checked out. You know, everything is working perfectly. And it's just basically harassment and trying to close down the ranch due to either extreme bias or just the fact that to make it short, basically, is we jumped through all their hoops, got all the environmental impact reports, got everything inspected, you know, everything was done, paid for all the permits, and they refused to give us the permits. And then they wrote us tickets for not having the permits. And then we paid the tickets and said, okay, now give us the permits. We spent over $12,000 in regular lawyer fees to try to get this done. And the lawyer finally just said, hey, they're gunning for you. They're not going to cooperate. They just want you gone. And he checked out too. And so we had to dismiss him and get it and start on our own. So basically, that's the problem that we're running into. We're running into some people that have Napoleon complexes, you know, that refuse to cooperate in any way. And although we have cooperated all the way with them and paid for everything, they've still refused to give us our permits and keep fining us for the permits. And it's just, some of the people on the planning commission were bragging how they were going to shut us down, you know, so that is their intent. So it is collusion and things like that. So since then we've, maybe Nate can talk about that. We've contracted out of it and are taking a whole new approach.
Yeah. And, you know, and through that process, we've met, you know, a ton of amazing people. A lot of expansion has come out of what, you know, what on from one perspective may look like a total nightmare. You know,
it's a learning experience.
It's been a tremendous opportunity. You know, we initially hooked up with Dean Clifford. Shortly around that time period is when we met Spencer. We've networked with a number of other awesome, inspiring individuals. Yeah, Kurt Flowers and, you know, a number of other folks that James has had on the radio show. And, you know, we've probably made a lot of mistakes and looked kind of foolish, too, along the way at certain times. And that's just been part of the learning experience. But at this point, you know, we're certainly not experts, but there's a few things that a few principles and basics that I think we have down pretty well. And the ranch is strategically set up at the best point it ever has been to deal with this as far as achieving that remedy and having the land patent and having, you know, uncontracted and disengaged from some of the adhesion contracts, if you will.
Yeah.
Well, that's a great, you know, that's a nice little segue for what I was thinking, Nate, because it is a huge opportunity to go back and look at that process of permitting and jurisdiction from for a county to come in and tell you what they can do on your land. And it turns out that there's a lot of hidden adhesion contracts that keeps people connected as a business partner to the county. And so once those start to show themselves and you start to see, hey, wait a minute, this is my land. How is it that you guys are coming onto the land? It's not just whether or not I'm doing things right by your rules and regulations. How about I just have my own rules and regulations just this side of harming other people? In other words, we don't have farm sewage and runoff going into other people's lands, that kind of thing, which is all handled by common law anyway. It's a great opportunity to see and test what it is that gives jurisdiction from those folks, and to be able to, in the words of Robert Menard, I'm telling. You know, once he found out what was going on with the hidden adhesion contracts that gets the government to have a partnership with you, as things are bound, so they are unbound. And so you just go and untie those contracts that are usually done in the form of submitting applications. You know, that application means to beg, and to submit means to yield to another's will. Now, that's how they look at it. You might find a lot of various definitions, but the intent behind using those terms and words is to harvest our own authority. And so once you got those little tricks, now you just can untie all those knots, and it can really leave those local-level bureaucrats quite shocked when they find out how it is that what authority that they're conducting themselves under.
Yeah, and it seems like, you know, that, as I said before, they have kind of Napoleon complexes, and they create problems where none exist. And you know, these aren't service-oriented programs. They were set up to be service-oriented programs, and then they went astray to controllers and then demanding basically extortion, you know.
Yeah.
You know, they're based on extortion, basically through fear and by making false claims and demands and things like that. Most people just cave in and go, oh, I'm sorry, you know, how can I fix that, you know? And so, and I had some people here kind of running the ranch at the time, a woman that was going to handle a lot of that, and said she had all the clout and the lawyers and everything, and we all know where that went. You know, it all went back into my lap, but which is why in error I allowed that to happen, you know, to go in that direction. But again, that's another lesson in not taking care of business and, you know, trusting some outside source to do something.
Yeah.
There's a good lesson in that.
Yeah.
And not that we all don't have that tendency, but it, when you see the system for, you know, how it really works, it's, man, things just unfold.
Oh, yeah. You know, I do see that there's some programs or some projects are huge, and it's going to take multiple people coming together to make these things happen. And it shouldn't be all on one back, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, because it is, you know, like, but you know, sometimes I love that old saying, "One on the side of God is the majority," you know. So, so it's a good way of looking at things.
Yeah. You know, and to kind of understand how the system really works aside from the sales pitch is as you start to learn, one of the challenges and barriers is that you're trying to develop a picture of something, and that new picture that you're developing competes with the picture that you have in your mind that you've been developing over, you know, the course of your life, however long, you know, anybody's particular life is.
Yeah.
And so as you start to develop this new picture, you can only develop that kind of like an analogy to a computer screen, one little pixel at a time. And if you try to understand it by forcing those new little details into your existing picture, it competes with it, and sometimes it's sometimes it can be incompatible. And so, you know, there's Neil Kramer is a philosopher and a writer that I know you two know real well, and he has a saying that is to take on these new concepts as light as a feather. And that dovetails with my analogy of, as you're building these concepts, just bear in mind that it's, you're developing a new picture in your mind, one pixel at a time. And if it tries to compete with how it is that you already see things, it can be too much.
Yeah. Well, so, I guess you're going from the identity of a slave to the identity of a free man. And a lot of people look down on the free man movement, or those who are claiming sovereignty and things like that. And a lot of that's because it's new and it's a new way of thinking, and it's had a lot of crashes and burns and lessons along the way. And the herd consciousness is so afraid of getting, you know, put outside the herd. You know, it's dependent on the herd.
Yeah.
The herd, you know, and, you know, a lot of that's going on, but, it's something that the universe is behind this whole wave of unity consciousness coming through universal law, and this Armageddon program where everything is coming up to the surface is all behind this. It's all a huge awakening and healing and standing in your own God self, basically.
Sure. Sure. You know, there was two universities did a study side by side, and the study was very subjective. And so they wanted to have two different outcomes to compare. And what they were doing was testing for just people's opinions. And so they would ask people what their opinions were on throughout a series of questions. And it wasn't even a test, but it was things like, what do you think of this color? What do you think of these flavors? What do you think of this style? Just what is your opinion? And down below, people had a choice to see what other people's opinions already were. You know, the majority opinion, what that was.
Oh, yeah.
And then they do another series of tests, and they'd ask people their opinions. But other people's opinions were not provided. The folks that were taking the test had to go and request the answer or the most popular opinion before they were given it. They had to ask for it, I don't know how it was exposed or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the third part of the test was they would ask people's opinions on certain things, as simple as, do you like this, or, you know, do you not like that? Mm-hmm. And they were not allowed to see other people's opinions. And people's opinions throughout this series of tests continually broke down to the point where as they got towards the end of the test, one of the answers that they were allowed to give is, I don't know, or I don't have an answer. And the less people were exposed to other people's opinions, the more they had an inability to provide their own. They just didn't know if they liked something or not. They had to see what someone else thought.
Yeah.
And the real solid number that both of those universities came up with was 85% of the people fell into some kind of shade of gray where they had to have, or they would have liked to have someone else's opinion before they could move forward. In other words, 15% of the people could provide their own.
And that's that herd consciousness. And, you know, we have been programmed through the media. You know, everybody knows Project Mockingbird, the CIA has pretty much total control of the media, and they just lead the people wherever they want to lead them. And people wait to see what the TV is going to say, what everybody else agrees in, or what the talking heads say. And then they form their opinion, which is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And here's what I like about the trend, though.
Yes, good one, huh?
Yeah.
Bing.
But the more folks that become aware of these kinds of things, and the bigger this group gets, the more comfortable it becomes for some people that were would maybe have been on the fringe.
Yeah.
To have a support system and a network. And if that's just the way it's going to be, it doesn't really help to be pointing the finger too strictly and calling them sheeple and the people that watch TV are just fools, because it doesn't make these type of this knowledge real approachable and that kind of thing. So
people are just waiting to wake up too.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's another thing. Like, it's a classic Kramer sort of thing. It's like, you don't wake up the sleeping baby. That sleeping baby is going to be ready to wake up on their own natural, you know, organic rhythm.
Sure.
Yeah. And if you wake it up early, it's going to scream and kick and fight.
Right. But at the same time, let's not have an environment that's too caustic for it to wake up in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, have a more welcoming,
we know
That kind of ties into, you know, one of the things that Spence and I have kind of been fascinated with, in exploring all this stuff. Like, you have to go and put yourself in what might some people might potentially look at as, you know, an adversarial or uncomfortable position of going and interacting with, you know, various officials of, you know, of whatever authority figures. And Spence has kind of looked at ways of neutralizing conflict has been a huge theme that comes up over and over again.
Yeah.
But to remember that, like, some of these people are not our adversary. It's just, you know, maybe they made a bad decision to be having that job, but potentially that's somebody that could wake up and come to some other conclusions eventually. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so what can we, it's not that our interaction with them is going to change their life, but how can we reframe perception of viewing, interacting with these situations? It's been something we've practically tested and also sat around and contemplated and talked about a lot. Yeah. And one of the things Spence was kind of famous for talking about was adopting, like, the getting into character. And one of the ones you'd constantly talked about was Bill Murray Bill Murray in a number of movies, but specifically in What About Bob?
Yeah, What About Bob? Where he's Bob Wiley,
mm-hmm.
and he takes on a very specific and deliberate approach.
Like Columbo, you know, where he's just kind of bumbling around in there, but at the end he always gets his man.
Yeah, and maybe it's not so much of an accident.
Yeah,
and there's a specific quote that Bob says in response to someone who is questioning him about certain things. And so to set up the movie, one of the elements that I always noticed was that he never bought into and identified with and then replied with the same level of caustic behavior or attitude or attack. He always just replied in just the way that his philosophy was in line with, and mm-hmm. every single time someone interacted with him, and it wasn't that, and it, specifically it was Richard Dreyfuss's character as his doctor.
Yeah.
And so in answering one of the questions, Bob says this. He says, "I treat people as if they were telephones." He said, "And I say to myself, Bob, this is just once, just temporarily out of order. Don't break the connection. Just hang up and try again."
Yeah.
And the gal says, "Does it work?" And he says, "It seems to be. I'm on vacation at Lake Winnipesaukee." In other words, as much as the doctor tried to defeat him, his methodology was just as – and I have that little clip here. I'm dying to play it. Can we just –
It's like 20 seconds, dude. Play it.
I think it's 12.
Guy, but yes, I freak. You know what I do? I treat people as if they were telephones. If I meet somebody who I don't think likes me, I say to myself, Bob, this one's just temporarily out of order. You know, don't break the connection. Just hang up and try again.
And does it work?
It seems to be. I'm on vacation at Lake Winnipesaukee, aren't I?
That's a good one.
It's great. And to take that and just to embody that character and then deliver your own intent and never getting caught up into anybody's counter offer of conflict is a tremendous asset. Mm-hmm. It's huge to just not get to buy into, you know, anybody offering an offer of conflict.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of that stuff is like especially when you go into court too, it's like they're going to always try to draw you into the conflict.
Sure.
And if you're there as a beneficiary, you're not there to engage in conflict or even deal with the details of everything. You're just there to have it taken care of. You know, you're there to instruct the trustee, the judge, or the appointed trustee, which you have to understand first and get that set up. But you have to, and you're just really there to get business taken care of, you know.
Yeah.
You're not there to argue all these little points and everything else. That's where they're trying to take you.
It is. It is. And if you
help, the understand thing too is important. When you say I don't understand, it means I don't stand under what you're doing here,
mm-hmm.
or I object, or I don't consent. You know, but that I understand is important. Maybe you can explain that a little more to the audience.
You understand is a confirmation of a meeting of the minds, and so if someone presents something to you and asks if you understand. Because we don't generally just everybody read everybody else's minds, understand it is the best confirmation that you can give to someone else, that you're at least satisfied that you have a meeting of the minds with the other guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best we can do is understand. And so, whether or not you do, most people are too readily, ready to just say, yeah, I understand, and not really understand that, I shouldn't use that word, but not really comprehend the impact of the word in a formal venue.
Uh-huh.
And a formal venue is the equivalent of speaking in computer algorithms, or it's speaking with the precise definitions of an engineer to a word. And in social conversations, we'll use lots of words with a completely different intent than mm-hmm. what's going on in a formal venue.
So if somebody says, when the judge reads all these things to you and says, do you understand? And you say, yes, it means you're standing under his jurisdiction.
Yeah.
And you're standing under everything he just said. You know, you're,
and there's
you're
no going back.
Basically guilty.
Well, and there's no, at least, well, or there's no going back in reverse in time. There's no, say, yeah. Hey, wait a minute, this thing you said 5 minutes ago can no longer be a controversy. Now, I'll give you an example. If you were in court and the judge asked you how fast you were driving, people would have an instinct to say, well, I was traveling down the road at 47 miles an hour or 32 miles an hour. And one of the pivotal
words. Fine driving.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Or he might say, I understand that you were driving 32 miles an hour. And you might say, no, I was going 25. He says, okay, well, fine. I understand you were driving 25 miles an hour. He might have some bait out there to get you to concentrate your focus on the velocity. And really, the word that he has in mind is the concept of drive, because it incorporates the notion of commerce, that you are conducting a commercial machine like a taxi or a delivery van.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you were to ask, and to understand at the end of that, and you confirmed a lot more than you might have realized.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the places and ways that the word understand is used as a tool.
What's a better word that you could use other than driving, which puts you under their commerce, you know, their program?
or traveling, or you can reuse driving yourself, and you just say, hey, Your Honor, just so you know, when I use the word driving, I don't want to infer that there's any element of commerce. Mm-hmm. So now we got to take away the meaning, because there may be many definitions to the word driving. It's just that they like that one in particular.
And basically, by doing that, you're just removing the presumption that we're going to be using that definition.
Right. Yeah. That's one way.
I was on a pleasure. I was traveling under pleasure.
Yeah. Or just traveling or operating. You know, operating a machine. You can use driving. You just say, hey, listen, when we use that word, this is what we mean.
Yeah.
That's done quite often in contracts. Say, listen, when we refer to the word property, it means this particular address, or, you know, that concept is used all the time. Just being aware of a formal venue is step one.
Yeah. I know that they always try to pull you into a contract, you know, if you get pulled over by the police or whatever, it's all about contracts, or they're trying to get you into a contract. And,
sure.
I know you had some funny ones that you're saying, am I free to go? Then am I under arrest? No, then am I free to go?
Right.
Am I under arrest? You know, or am I a slave, or am I a free man? You know, it's like, you know, well, there's all kinds of things, but some of those things are cracking me up where you're, you know, playing with the situation.
Uh-huh. One of the first elements of, you know, the first element of a contract is the name of the parties. And so anytime you give your name, there's a presumption that you want to contract.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is one of the first things done in court. What is your name? And then when you give that, it's difficult to get out of it. And it takes some very cool-headed, calm analysis and some study to find what are some alternative phrases and things. But if you give your name, you're doing several things. One is you're saying, first of all, I agree that I want a contract with you. So number two is, here is my name. Go ahead and put that down on the rest of the terms and conditions that unfold in our conversation. And then some of the things that as far as alternatives to what your name is, that's probably too much of a discussion for right here. But some of that point that you were bringing up is to always then offer a back door out of the conversation, because a lot of times if you paint somebody too hard into a corner, they can be too aggressive to get back out of it. And so if you offer an alternative path, and it's an alternative path to peace and resolution, that might be a great way to start to practice is, hey, wait a minute, let's not worry about not getting into it. Let's start developing a way back out. And so to offer them, you might say whatever, or you might button that concept up with, or should I have a nice day? You know, because a lot of times that's a way to wrap up a conversation, a lot of times with the police or whatever. And so I guess I kind of feel a need to caution on lots of cool-headed, calm analysis without jumping to too fast of conclusions or listening to somebody else's opinion, that kind of thing.
Well, you can't just jump into this. It takes a lot of research and a lot of practice, and you're probably going to get knocked down a few times in the process, and you have to it's not just like driving through Burger King and you're enlightened, you know, or now you're a judge or a lawyer or whatever, you know.
Right.
So I know from my own experience, this crash course is blowing a few fuses in my head, you know, trying to
put a new one in.
But anyway, we're coming up to the end of the hour, so we've just got a couple minutes left. I don't know if there's anything you want to leave with, or I know we wanted to discuss a little bit about how we've had to change the nature of the ranch, and we had to turn it into a private situation. So if people do still want to come to the ranch, they can come through private invitation, and they have to ask, you know, send us an email or give us a call, and that, you know, make it clear this is no longer a public venue just due to all the legal problems that that we've run into.
Legal opportunities.
Yeah.
Yeah, so hey, let me sign off real quick, then I'll pass it to Spence. And just on that note, I'll tell people, you know, all of us are really, really busy right now, too, at the ranch with dealing with all that. If people want to contact us, maybe like in March, we may be in a better position to discuss potentials of, you know, of setting up times for people to do sessions or to receive a private invitation, something of that nature. Mm-hmm. But it'd be helpful if we're not getting flooded over the next month or so. And then the other little thing I just wanted to point out is, if people go to the website, they can check out some sort of radical new therapy at wordpress.com. And there is an archive of all of Spencer's videos that are up there. Definitely cool stuff to check out. And when we were talking about the Divine Province earlier in the conversation, if people want to just go to divineprovince.org, there's all sorts of really interesting information there as well.
And that's what John's affiliated with, who's coming up next. Yeah,
who's coming up next. Yeah.
Yeah, and this is going to be a great show. I mean, it's this next show is he really talks a lot about all of this stuff, and the energy is just great, and just you know, he really covers a way of getting back to peace, mm-hmm. you know, and conflict resolution, and how we do a lot of these things. So stay tuned for the second hour, and thanks a lot, Nate and Spence, for coming on and bringing some clarity to this, and. I'm sure we're going to be on again.
Cool. You're welcome.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure, man.
All right. Have a good evening. Greetings. This is James Gillen, and I'm your host. We've got another great show today. Excuse me if I get a little tongue-tied or screw up here, because my tongue is going one way and my mouth is going another. I just got back from the dentist and had some pretty major work done. But that being said, I want to welcome our guest on, and... you know, this is amazing, amazing topics. We can cover just about everything. We've got John Raffanello, I hope I'm saying that right, and he's a former space electronics engineer who initially worked with the American Space Team developing the guidance system for the Saturn S-4B moon rocket. His passion for discovering exactly how and why things work led him into a lifetime study of ways to assist individuals and organizations to find and achieve worthwhile and previously unachievable objectives. This work led to the creation, marketing, and delivery of hundreds of seminars, workshops, and courses, as well as thousands of hours of one-to-one life skills, mastery, counseling, and training. At Disney, John's work on the Epcot project for Disney's Disney World applied many of his team-building personnel enhancement techniques to creators, engineers, and management personnel. In addition, John guided hundreds of individuals into ways of expanding human ability far beyond conventional realms. This work was later codified under WonderTech's Practical Metaphysics umbrella. John is a master storyteller and showman. His ability to breathe life into stalled dreams and projects is legendary among his friends. His inexhaustible creative imagination has given birth to hundreds of projects, including film scripts, theme park attractions, and WonderTech life skills mastery materials. He's a true friend, a man sincerely and honestly devoted to making life a little better for all of us. So without any further ado, I want to welcome John to the show. John, are you with us?
I'm with you, but I don't know who that resume was about. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we set a pretty high mark for you. Let's hopefully we set the bar pretty high there. But
yeah, rather, yeah, said, well, John's a pretty nice guy. We'll see if he's got anything decent to say.
Well, you know, that's the way our show is, basically. It's just a conversation and no worries. And we just let it flow wherever it needs to go.
Oh, well, that's great. That's great.
You know, I got some, I know you have quite a few projects going. And they seem to be pretty amazing. You've got you were talking about you've got a lot of movies in the works and a few other like theme park centers and things of that nature. I'd like to hear a little bit about that.
Well, I've studied, as I told you a little earlier, with geniuses and crackpots all over the world trying to figure out what makes life better for me and others, and then taught seminars and workshops in an attempt to learn what I was trying to teach to other people and see what really worked, and was blessed with seeing all sorts of miracles. And, you know, in the very real world, in terms of people having a wonderful relationships and great health and being able to follow their dreams, that sort of thing. And then in the esoteric realm of it, you know, being able to experience higher levels of their consciousness, have experiences that transcend the normal day-to-day reality. And in seeing all of this over about a 40, 50-year period, I wanted to find a way to deliver it to people in a very entertaining way. Mm-hmm. Because, as you know, you tend to run into all sorts of barriers, people who have fixed ideas regarding this material. So I hit on the idea of using entertainment as a way of bringing people to the material. And that led into the creation and design of a theme park called Wonder World, which I initially billed as a living invitation to make life wonderful, coupled to all the know-how to pull it off. So in addition to it being extremely entertaining, every pavilion, every land in the park first entertains, second inspires with the people with the idea that they can pull off any dream they imagine, then brings about a certain amount of enlightenment and provides the education or the know-how they need to pull off those dreams, whatever that know-how may be. It'll be the first theme park that actually has a university as part of the theme park. Wow. And the university is designed to take all of this know-how, entertain people into the ability to pull it off. And the park's a lot of fun. You can discuss wisdom with a dragon. Right.
Yeah, I've done that.
You can fly with them. There's a dragon wisdom theater that tells how the dragons of wisdom were the original dragons, and the dragons of conflict and war came into existence, and then the dragons of play that sort of smoothed the whole thing out. Uh-huh. You can telepathically attract dolphins to swim with you. We've got a land called Atlantis and the Water Humans, where the dolphins have their own lake. Humans aren't allowed. Uh-huh. And the guests go into what's called a dolphin telepathy theater. And there they are invited to put out vibrations of love and joy and fun, spirit of play, that will attract the dolphins to come and swim with them at their choice. Mm-hmm. And
nice, yeah. Now, these are real dolphins, right? We're not talking about animated.
No, we're talking about real dolphins who supposedly have been in telepathic communication with water worlds mm-hmm. a long time, and we dramatize that in the park also. So.
Great. That sounds awesome. I would definitely sign up for that one.
Yeah, so would I. I'm looking forward to going.
I went on a dolphin swim in Hawaii, and it was kind of, when I first jumped in the water, I go, you know, we're out in the middle of nowhere, and I'm floating around in this water, and there's big fish that eat people, and all these thoughts are going through my mind, and next thing you know, I see a huge barracuda go by, and then a shark. And then I said, then I thought about it, and I said, I better get my thoughts together here, because I'm manifesting the wrong experience, you know.
Well, congratulations on being able to attract things that matched your thoughts. That's very physical.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I had to laugh at myself, you know, after doing that.
I used to love to do that. We used to do a workshop in Hawaii and in Malibu here in California, where we would put out the vibrations and to attract the dolphins, and very much a spirit of play and fun. And then go out in the ocean and actually swim with them. So those are fun experiences. And that's what led to this particular theme park attraction, one of the lands.
Yeah, I've had crazy kind of out of body and dreams with dolphins. And actually, I was doing this radio show once on a beach in Santa Cruz, and one of them popped up right as I was doing the show and just sat there staring at me, you know, and I had to acknowledge it, you know, I couldn't let that one go.
Oh, that's great. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. But, yeah, I think that's awesome that we can start interacting, you know, with nature and these other intelligent beings here on Earth, and also the wisdom of some of the technologies. I worked for 7 years with a physicist that was from Germany, and I don't know how many degrees he had. I forgot, you know, but he's one of those guys where he's just off the scale. And, you know, I saw technologies, magnetic light tables, water technologies where he crystallized oxygen and stabilized it, you know, at room temperature and water. Just amazing things. I mean, this guy could clone a human if he needed to. And in seeing these technologies, as well as fuelless energy and not just anti-gravity, but counter-gravity, you know, I look at all these things that are here now, they're on the planet. And it sounds like you've got an avenue to kind of educate people that this is a possibility.
Absolutely. In fact, we'll have to get into closer communication with you and this man you're talking about, because two of the lands in the theme park are called United Worlds, mm-hmm. which is designed to, there's a section of it called the Conflict Resolution Emporium. And we dramatize theatrical performances that say that it is in the interest of the vested interest to support the individual freedom of every man, woman, and child, because when they do so, the quality of their lives takes a quantum leap. So instead of opposing the idea of their concept of domination and control, we're inviting them to discover that the quality of their life can take a quantum leap. Mm-hmm. And then next door to that is United Worlds. And aliens who claim to have all the problems that we had on Earth and resolve them all are teleporting in from different realities. Their ships are landing. You can hang around with them at the crashed saucer salad bar.
Yeah.
Discuss all the answers that they came up with. Mm-hmm. And on the other side of the park is an area called the Galaxy Swings. Mm-hmm. In that area, we marry the familiar with the unfamiliar to break down the barriers that people kind of naturally have with the unfamiliar or things that seem weird. So we marry the familiar with the unfamiliar. And we have things like the Dixieland Robot Ramblers. They're robots, but they play Dixieland music.
That's a good one.
Yeah, we got the Alien Four of the weirdest looking aliens you ever want to see. They sing traditional four-part barbershop harmony.
I can't wait to see that. Have you made these prototypes already, or is this just in the works?
They're scripted. There's artwork connected with them. Certain amount of models have been built, especially, for instance, in that area, there's a beautiful, huge Victorian structure called Mama's Galaxy Restaurant. At the entrance says, fine food and good service, a tradition in seven galaxies for over a million years.
Yeah, that works.
When you enter into the restaurant, you are literally sitting among the seven galaxies in which Mama located her restaurants, following the family philosophy that family, love, and good food will solve anything.
Yeah, I've always felt that way. I here at the ranch, you know, I kind of make it a point that we have, you know, group meals and things like that, and all sit down together, and you know, we you know, have a nice campfire out here and sit around and play music and you know, it just keeps life so much better. And what's funny is we don't have TV up here. We don't watch TV, although, you know, we can download things on the internet and do things of that nature. We sit out and watch the sky or we have a campfire, we play music or something like that. And boy, if you sit out and watch the sky every night, your whole consciousness seems to expand, you know, with that, and the sky starts reacting back to you. So we just have quite a show going on here on a regular basis. And some of the things you're talking about are actually manifesting. You know?
Well, sounds like a fun place to take a vacation. You'll have to invite me to come down sometime.
Oh, anytime. It's a life-changing event when people come here, especially when a big ship powers up right over your head. It's pretty amazing.
Oh, that's marvelous.
But the other things that you're working on, these projects, they seem just amazing. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Divine Providence. That's how I was introduced to you, because you were speaking at one of their events. I believe it was in Sacramento.
Right.
And it's an amazing event. And as you were saying, it's so important to totally support the individual and maintain the individual freedom and prosperity, and then everybody else prospers. I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that subject.
Well, one of the favorite concepts of the Divine Providence is the intention to orchestrate, reorchestrate, recreate the financial system to the point where the survival needs of every man, woman, and child on the planet are met, so that they can follow their particular uniqueness, their particular passion, and move forward in life. And that's such a beautiful concept in itself, to reorganize instead of a domination, control, and suppression type of financial system where based on scarcity and based on the pyramid structure where we're the boss. You know, the old divine right of kings, where leaders are the ones that control everything, and the rest of the people are slaves to more or less degree. To have that all dissolve and empower the individual is just magnificent. Because, you know, you look at America became one of the greatest nations in the world, primarily because people were allowed to follow their passion. They were allowed to follow their dreams, their aspirations, develop their own uniqueness. If that could occur throughout the world, because the survival was no longer a problem, we would literally transform this planet into the paradise that it was always meant to be. You know? So,
I always agree. I always felt, you know, that there was a divine plan, and that was for everybody to live a thoroughly loving, joyous, prosperous life, you know, in touch with their creator. And it seemed to have gotten hijacked, but when you try to bring it back on course again, there's incredible resistance to that, because there is the separation game, the elitist program, and the haves and have nots, and basically I think it's a lot about educating the haves that you know, although they have a lot of material gain or whatever, they seem to be lacking in spirit and anything that's eternal or ongoing. It's all transitory.
Right, very much so. I think a lot the resistance is actually springing out of our own resistance and out of our lack of understandings about how to approach things. Mm-hmm. One of the things I really loved discovering was that if you oppose somebody's point of view, they're going to defend it to the death.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's your death or theirs. So opposition to their point of view doesn't work. In fact, it's fundamentally ridiculous, because every individual creates their point of view. It doesn't need any defense, fundamentally, because it's created by the person themselves. But if you go in this opposition type of reality, you're going to continue, you're contributing to the war game, contributing to the conflict. But if you come at it from the viewpoint of the quality of your life is going to take a quantum leap, going to be grander and greater than ever before, and we all win with it, everyone wins, everyone gets a quantum leap, and can bring about that awareness, especially if you can just entertain people into that, then you're really going to make progress. That's one of the things I liked about James McBride, was his awareness that you've got to come from peace, and you got to come from the viewpoint of everybody wins, not the viewpoint of opposing the dastardly things that were done.
Yeah.
the banking cartel, it simply will not work. Right? You know, so I love that idea. And then, of course, if we back it up even farther, like I was saying, I studied with geniuses and crackpots. I also studied all of the different religions. I was brought up Catholic. And one of the things I discovered, you know, through studying with the Jesuits and then all sorts of other areas, was that there was a fear in the corporate structure of the church that the true meaning of the second coming of Christ would get discovered. Because the second coming of Christ meant that the individual discovered they were the Christ, and that that was a level of consciousness. Mm-hmm. Conscious that you were divinity, that you were God, that the reality was being created out of your own consciousness. And now quantum physics is proving what metaphysics has been asserting for eons, the viewpoint that we're creating our own reality. But unfortunately, most of us have it as an intellectual concept. Oh, yeah, we create our own reality. Rather than techniques that actually enable us to experience that we really do. Right? That we are the divinity, that it is our belief systems that have orchestrated the realities we're experiencing into existence. And that the universe has no choice but to prove that we're right, no matter what we believe.
Yeah. I've always had we're having quite a challenge here. I'd love to get your take on it, but we've had like 9 court cases with the county, who have done everything they can to shut this place down, and they even said that was their agenda, and we have some Baptist people on the board and some not real, I don't want to say anything derogatory, but let's say not real educated people throwing out all kinds of crazy stuff. And, you know, we have tried everything possible, you know, paid them all their fees, jumped through all their hoops, did everything, and they refused to cooperate in any way whatsoever and just had basically one agenda, and that is to shut down so nobody can come to the ranch here and close it down. But so we've actually we tried the regular move, you know, we got a lawyer, we tried everything, that didn't work, that just cost us a lot of money. And then so we just started taking ourselves out of the system because we found out the system is just too corrupt and too slow and can't figure things out, and moved into this other another way. And now the next step we're taking is the divine province, you know, where we're actually, you know, again, going through all the paperwork to the highest level, which actually creates a whole different system that is based on the principles that you're talking about. And I don't know if you have any suggestions there, because we're going to go up for round 10 here.
I definitely do.
Yeah.
I ran into all of this sort of attempts to handle things in the ways that you were speaking of, and
yeah,
into all of the brick walls, until I learned from a few aliens better approaches.
Yeah.
One of the better approaches, in fact, I'll tell you an interesting story that leads to it. I had a couple of people who ended up as clients of mine who were being attacked by a religious organization that they had withdrawn from because they no longer agreed with the control techniques that this particular church was acting in. And they tried all of the things, the legal, and the church was doing dastardly things like messing with their finance accounts, dumping garbage on their lawns. And they were incensed and attempted to handle these in all sorts of ways. And basically, the more they attempted to handle it, the worse it got. That finally ended up on my doorstep, and I said to them, I said, let's look at it. And they were very incensed. Oh, they dumped all of this garbage on their lawn. And I said to them, did they do a good job of dumping the garbage on your lawn? What do you mean, did they do a good job? Well, did they do it well? Was there garbage all over? But yeah. Well, how about if we admire what a great job they did of dumping the garbage, because that's what they intended to do. What do you mean, admire them? You know, and we went through this thing. Well, you're admiring that they did what they intended to do. They messed with your financial accounts. Did they mess with them quite well? You know? And the concept here was that we were inviting people to admire what a great job these people did of doing these things. It took a while. I invited them, you know, they had very negative viewpoints and judgments. Oh, these are bad guys, or these guys are stupid, or they are ignorant, and all of this massive amount of judgments. And I got them to address the judgments one by one and to discover that those judgments were, in fact, simply creating a ridge between them and these people. So I got them to own the judgments as their own creation and then admire what it is they were doing, and then to realize something very basic was why people do things. And primarily people do things because they think it's going to get them what they want. They think it's going to produce the reality they want. Why do they oppose somebody? Because they think that in opposing that person, their truth, their reality, if they can knock out this other person's false reality, quote unquote, then they're going to achieve what they want. And if you can understand that, then you can relax the negative judgment of them because they're attempting to achieve what everyone's attempting to achieve. They're attempting to get life the way they want. Well, the bottom line is when we went through and I got the person to relax all the judgments, admire the activities they did, all of the attacks stopped. They just ceased without doing anything in the real world. Quite fascinating. When all of the resistance disappeared. And some part of this technology came out of my experiences with Daryl Ankle channeling the alien who called himself Bashar. Mm-hmm. One day we were at a channeling session. There was about 100 people there. We expanded into a larger facility. And Bashar was talking to a woman about her dreams. And this Hell's Angel, nasty-looking Hell's Angel guy, cut right across the communication and said to Bashar, "Do you have any weapons on your ship?" he said. Which is where his mentality was coming from. And Bashar responded, "We no longer have any use for the tool." It was the first time in my life I ever considered weapons to be a tool, which is, of course, exactly what they are. Someone comes up with a 45 revolver and offers you a choice between having a hole put in your anatomy or your wallet, you know, and gives you that choice using his 45 revolver tool. Because, see, Bashar's civilization, they were saying that they had evolved out of the need to use weapons in order to achieve their objective. But the Hell's Angel guy didn't get this at all, you know. In fact, it took me a while to get it. I had to go back and study it. But when he said to him, "We no longer have any use for the tool," it sounded like he didn't answer his question at all, and it pissed him off. So the next thing he said was, "What if your ship lands in a hostile area? What the hell are you going to do then?" He didn't use hell. He used a stronger word, which I won't use on the radio.
Yeah, I think I got it.
You know, but Bashar's answer blew me away. He said, quote, "Our navigational computers are attuned to our own consciousness. And since we do not vibrate with hostility in our consciousness, it is impossible for our ships ever to land in a hostile area." That if the vibration is not a part of who you are, you cannot find it. It cannot find you. If we do not vibrate with the idea, with the belief that there are people opposing us and we're going to have to handle them and that there is going to be conflict, you know, from his viewpoint, if that vibration is owned, dissolved, ceased to be created, then the conflict becomes impossible, scientifically impossible. because the vibration no longer exists as part of your consciousness, and a vibration of hostility can't find you. Nice theory. Beautiful theory. Now the idea is, how practical is it? Can you actually pull it off? And that's what I went to work with a number of clients, and I found that when they really dissolve their resistance, their fear, their protest, their negative judgments, their pissed offness with what other people were doing, and when they simply genuinely understood, they, like them, were trying to achieve objectives in some very unworkable way, true, but still trying to achieve an ideal scene for everybody. When that all relaxed, the conflicts magically disappear.
Right? Yeah. So now it's interesting now that probably their target as them as being as part of the conflict probably disappeared, but I wonder if the conflict was still going on within that church, or let's say the control mechanisms that they were continually trying to use.
Well, according to Bashar, every reality that we can imagine exists. Mm-hmm. It's a matter of which one are we energizing? You know, which version of reality are we compositing into existence with our belief systems and our ideas? You know, so from that viewpoint, yes, every reality continues to exist. Whether it exists as part of our day-to-day experience, that's another question.
Yeah, that's the way I feel. I mean, I don't want to create war with anybody, but I really want to get them to let go of their warring on us. And you know, and we've come at everything in peace. You know, we haven't even dealt with any adversarial positions on this, and been trying to educate them on you know where we're going and where there's been no harm, only good. You know, trying to take all these approaches, and I think it's going to come to an end here, you know, pretty soon, because it's, I don't think that program is frequency specific to where the planet is going. And it's just a matter of time before all these old control paradigms and power over others and forcing your will on others and just acting outside of universal law are imploding. You know, it's, I guess we have to learn some tools to, you know, when these big structures fall, that we're not standing underneath them when they do.
Exactly. Well, again, are we creating a reality that says we are energizing the possibility of being under these structures when they collapse? Is that part of our consciousness or not?
Yeah, well, it's kind of like the way I see it is I'm moving in a different direction. All right, so we're moving in a whole different direction. We're moving to create peace, to create heaven on earth, to go in this direction. And that's our focus. But we seem to be, have a few Klingons, you know, that kind of want to keep their direction.
Well, see, it's interesting. One of my great realizations, which occurred a number of years ago, was that everyone is always 100% totally correct. Mm-hmm. They're going, well, your organization, you know, give me an example of one of the reasons that one of these groups is trying to shut you down.
It's kind of weird because the only reason I can think is just because we operate outside the box. I think they're very afraid of anything outside their belief system, be it religion or anything else, or anything concerning UFOs. Or I'm not really sure exactly. I know how they're trying to do it. They're trying to do it by saying, you know, that, like, you know, septic tanks aren't working, things like that. But they've all been inspected, and they have the paperwork on that's all in perfect working condition. So it's like, you know, they create problems where none exist and make up things that are false. But the problem is that you go before the judge to get a remedy, and then the judge just goes ahead and rubber stamps whatever they say. And it's sad because, you know, and this sounds like a judgment, but it's kind of a, it's a good old boy network, and it's a very corrupt system right now. And that's what we're operating within.
Well, I would like to, I'd like to offer this. I hear you, and I got what you said.
Yeah.
I would like to, if something is not working, we need to discover that there's something we don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We don't have a workable technology, and we need to be humble enough to realize that and then go look for what works. And here's something that I find very interesting. Many years ago, I discovered, again, that every individual is always 100% totally correct.
Oh, yeah. They're all creating their own reality from that.
If you were to say, you say, oh, well, these people are not comfortable with us being outside of the box, or they label us being outside of the box as bad. Would you say that's your point? Okay.
Or a threat, or a danger, or some threat.
Dangerous, okay. Do you realize that when they label you bad, when they label you dangerous, they are 100% totally correct?
Yeah, from their perspective.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's the approach we need. You know, you guys are crazy. You're 100% totally correct.
Yeah.
You guys are nuts. You're out of the rocker. Absolutely. You're 100% totally correct. What are you, crazy? The way you're responding to me sounds totally nuts. You're right. You're 100% totally correct. Right? See, there becomes no opposition when you genuinely see that the person is, in fact, 100% totally correct. And if we get that in our consciousness and we validate their version of reality as one of the valid ways that reality can be created, one of the valid ways that reality can be looked at, then the opposition has to disappear. Right? Hey. It is where we attempt to handle them or show them that we're okay or prove to them. If we're trying to say, hey, we're really okay, and they're going, you're not okay, then we're in a war game. Because they are totally correct. Their viewpoint that we are not okay is 100% totally correct. Right? And when there's no resistance or opposition to that or attempt to prove to them that we're okay, when they're not open to accepting that point of view, then we're in a war game with their point of view. And we war with somebody's point of view, they're going to defend it to the death.
Oh, yeah. I've always said that. You know, that's one of my things. Consciousness creates reality. And, you know, we're all creating our world according to our consciousness. So everybody's right. You know, it's just that there's some realities that might be a little more aligned with universal law or a little more expanded.
But, so let's go create them. Let's put all our energy on creating the reality we want, the paradise we want, but not doing it by opposing other people's viewpoints. Mm-hmm. Simply do it by creating wonderful things. Obviously, you are doing a phenomenal amount of that. You know, your place is absolutely delightful. And if alien ships are showing up in it, you've got to be in harmony with all your friends and buddies out there.
what's ironic is the whole town loves us.
Yes.
And we have this huge stack of letters from all the people, all the businesses in town. Everybody is saying, you know, these guys have done nothing but good, you know, and they help business out and you know, they're all for it. You know, they don't have any derogatory. The only little derogatory stuff that anybody would have is that we're not Baptists, you know, basically, or we're not cutting down trees, you know, but, you know, we're not loggers or Baptists, but, you know, it's like, I have nothing against, you know, taking down a tree, you know, and creating something nice about it, you know, but I've planted 7,000 trees here on the property. So it's like, you know, I drive up the driveway and there's all these trees that are probably 25, 30 feet tall that I planted, you know, when I first got here. Some are even 50 feet tall. But they're like my friends, you know. They're like my little sentinels as I come up the driveway. You know, but it's, you know, we usually take trees that are dying. You know, if you know, I haven't really cut a live tree here on the property. But one day, if they're just totally overgrown, if all these little ones grow up to be huge and they're fighting for nutrients or whatever, sure, you know, I don't see anything wrong with that.
Yeah, well, see, what you're doing is absolutely beautiful. And, I mean, there's no greater acknowledgement, no greater praise than the love of all of these people. You know, and I can feel the magnificence of what you've created. And you know, obviously, 99% of what you're doing is all creative and beautifully creative. And it can be seen, you know. And I think the idea is just tweaking it a little in terms of allowing those people that seem to be opposing you to be 100% totally correct.
Yeah.
But the only thing wrong with you is you're not Baptist. Oh, you're right. That's the only thing wrong with us. And the other, oh, well, there's one other thing wrong with you. You don't cut down trees. Yeah, good point. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, you're right.
Right. Yeah. Not that you go do it. So opposition, right?
Yeah.
Whereas their reality is okay, too. But if you have a negative viewpoint, oh, cutting down trees is bad. Well, cutting trees is not intrinsically bad. It's cutting down a tree is what it is. It's fundamentally neutral.
Yeah.
As my alien friend said, you assign a negative meaning to something, you're going to have a negative effect on yourself instantly. Right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, and if you go, well, that's a reality. That's one way of looking at things. Of course, if you cut down all the trees, then you're not going to have any trees. And that might not be as much fun as having the trees.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
I
find it interesting people move up to the forest here. First thing they do is clear their land and make a pasture. And uh-huh. then they go, I just love living in the forest.
Yeah.
You know, I go, well, you know, there's millions of miles of pasture land down low. Why didn't you just go there? You know,
a little bit of an old rigid way of thinking at, you know, that you're going to hold to that old rigid way of thinking without looking at it. I mean, it's been traditional. When I was brought up Catholic, the one thing you were not supposed to do, although it was never articulated up front, was you don't look. You don't look at these principles. You don't examine them to see whether they're true or not. You just accept them, period. Right?
Yeah, I wrote a couple books, three books actually, and one covered the true history of Earth and religion and everything else. And this one person, and, you know, it had the real story of Jesus, you know, and it, you know, goes into what you said is that, you know, his whole message was God is within, and we don't, you know, we won't be worshiping God in the temples or in the mountaintops, but within self. And all of these things kind of got him done in, basically. But, it's kind of interesting, you know, when you teach the and you quote, you know, his quotes and say, this is what he said. You know, we had a person, this person read the book and it turned her upside down so bad and she threw it in the fire and just burned it.
Yep.
And she told me that. She goes, yeah, when I read your book, and she was apologizing, you know, about, you know, I just had to throw your book in the fire. It turned my whole world upside down. And the points you were making were just, I couldn't handle them, you know. And I just said, well, I hope it made you warm, you know. I said, you know, I hope you got warm from the...
Good for you. That's great.
Yeah, from the fire, you know. And she goes, I'm really sorry. And I go, you know, you bought it. It's your book. You can do with it whatever you want.
Oh, that's beautiful.
Yeah, I said, it doesn't need defending, you know. And she bought another book, you know. So.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I remember one of my favorite things I've quoted many times of Jesus is when he's doing the miracles, he turns to the apostles. He says, these things ye shall do and greater things, right? And then it is done unto us as we believe. Well, I think it's about time we did these greater things. But in order to accomplish that, you know, we've got to get rid of certain false viewpoints. I think, and one of them in Catholicism and in many religions, Christian religions, was the idea, the unspoken idea, there's only one God and it is not you. Yeah. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, Christ was saying the opposite. He's saying, you know, thou art God, you know. And,
yeah.
And that's kind of where I actually got into this game was a gal who was a VIP at the Continental Airlines when I was working there part-time, putting bags on the airplane. She gave me a copy of Stranger in a Strange Land, Heinlein's book, right? Uh-huh. Where Michael Valentine Smith comes to the realization that thou art God. We are the gods.
Oh, yeah.
Creating the reality. That's what Jesus is saying, and that's why he could do the miracles, because he had an in-depth realization of his own divinity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've always asked that question. You know, I always ask, is God omnipresent? And they say yes. And I said, so where's the problem? You know? You know, I said, there's no exclusivity. And no separation and omnipresence. I said, how do you divide yourself and separate yourself? And what about all those other children of God out there that might be of a different color or culture? You know, where'd they come from? You know, we all come from the same source. We all go back to the same source. And boy, that just pulls the rug out from under a lot of separation games that are going on.
Yep. Yeah.
But they're right.
Yeah. You know, they also have to have a rug. They need a gradient of steps that are comfortable enough to be able to change, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As one of my philosophers said, you know, you got to make them right enough to change. You can't bring them to an awareness of too many wrongnesses. They'll go on and stay.
Yeah. I was meditating once, and Babaji came to me, and he said, you don't water seedlings with a fire hose. Well, and I was guilty of that one, you know.
You're a real delight. I really am delighted over what you created, and I definitely like to come and visit you sometime. It sounds like you.
Oh, you'd have a blast here, just playing with the energies here and observing what's going on all these different levels. You know, we'll definitely, you know, we have an open invitation if you want to come up. Just, I'm sure if you email us, Nate handles those, and as soon as he sees your name, he'll be delighted to have you come up and check out the ranch.
I'd like to plan a time to come up. It's marvelous what you've created, and you continue to create it despite any reason you should not. Reminds me of the story of Winston Churchill when he was asked to give the graduating class at Oxford. Did you ever hear that story?
Oh, God, I might have, but...
Fascinating. He was a bit intoxicated at the time, as he often was. And he was announced the great Winston Churchill at the graduating commencement address. And of course, he was given a standing ovation. And the ovation settled down. He kind of pushed himself out of his chair and moved himself over the podium and put both of his hands on it and steadied himself. He looked out at the graduating class and he said, never! Give up. Never, never, never give up. And he sat down.
That's good advice.
Loved it.
Yeah, it's amazing that what we have access to, what we can create here, and you know, what's possible. We have just unbelievable healing technologies, all these other things, but we really have to get our place in order and you know, get in, which that's what we're doing is set up the structure where we can do that, you know, and go forward with these incredible technologies, you know, without the resistance that we've been experiencing.
Yeah, well, that was my whole idea of entertaining people into it. You know, the theme park, the Wonderworld theme park, is part of it is the idea is that you're walking into a future Earth, mm-hmm. an Earth in which we are now members of the United Association of Worlds, where we, you know, we get along with everybody, and one of the mystiques in the park is the guests can be made up like an alien to whatever degree they want. You know, it can be the full prosthetic makeup if they want. And one of the mystiques is you don't know if the person walking around is one of our cast members, one of the staff members, one of the Wonder Team, whether it's a guest made up as an alien or whether a real alien is walking around.
That would be a way for contact. You know, here it's funny because whenever the ships get really close or start doing crazy stuff, we have the black helicopters and all the other problems going on. But I just laugh at them, you know, wave at them and film them, you know, put them up on YouTube. Hey, look at our visitors, you know. So it's kind of funny. But if you had a situation like that, you know, it would be a perfect place for contact to interact where people could, the ETs could feel safe, you know, and walk among us without, you know, without all the other drama going on.
Yeah, it's the old magic trick. You know, you allow the person to have it as a fantasy. Mm-hmm. You know, is the magician doing real magic or not? That your choice.
Yeah.
When you attempt to enforce the reality, oh, this is a real alien, then you're going to get in trouble.
Right? Oh, you know, I saw right. Something happen. It's so interesting. It's that, you know, the space station came over. This big ship came over, right? And the space station came over, and then this big ship came right behind it 5 minutes later. And then it was actually following the space station. It caught up to it and was trailing it right behind it, you know, this big ship. And we got it on film and everything. And I thought it was hilarious. And everybody goes, oh, that's the space station. I go, no, we filmed the space station too. And we filmed the ship catch up to it. And there was no launches. There was no Russian rockets, no shuttles, nothing, you know, up there that is supposed to be docking with the space station. And this other object just finally took off, you know, it overhead. And so they gave us the option. They gave everybody the option. Well, you can just say it. You can dismiss it as a space station if you want, or you can look deeper into it and realize that there's a lot more to what happened there. And it seems like they always do that. They give you the option of maintaining your old belief system or moving out into something a little more expanded.
Absolutely. Power of choice is senior to anything. Mm-hmm. Somebody has to violate a person's power of choice, and now you're getting into an old domination structure at work. Right.
Yeah, being kind of a, we only have a few minutes left, but being a little devil's advocate, you know, and people, I know what people are going to say. They're going to say, well, what about Hitler? You know, he needed to be stopped. Or what about you know, they could bring up, you know, all kinds of tyranny and say they needed to be stopped.
Yes, within the reality structure, within the game structure that was going on, where people wanted to create freedom, but at the same time they were creating the ability to be negatively the effect of somebody else. Yes, within that created game structure, something needed to be done. Absolutely. But philosophically, Hitler was attempting to do what everybody else was doing. He was attempting to create an ideal scene for the Germans. You know, at least that was the purported purpose. His methods of killing everybody who was not, who he decided was not harmonizing with his vision, is not a good way to go.
No.
It doesn't work.
Might be a little karmic backlash on that one, you know.
You're right. You know, so, but fundamentally, he was trying to pull off an ideal scene. Mm-hmm. He was just nuts, if you will, or regarding how to actually achieve it. His technology was extremely unworkable within the game structure that he was connected with. And yes, where you have people who want to not be ruled by Hitler, yes, within that game structure, they got to make their moves. Mm-hmm. But mentally, you know, if we can get at that level of consciousness, we're creating the game structure that says we can affect other people and other people can affect us. That's a real bottom floor reality that we're creating. when we cease to create the reality that we can be negatively affected by somebody else, as Bashar suggests we do, at least theoretically, and there's a lot of evidence practically in clients I've worked with supporting the reality that we don't need to do that. But yes, those people who say he needed to be stopped are 100% totally correct.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny because you read about, and I'm not saying he had the right idea, but you know, you read about the history. You know, the guy's a vegetarian. You know, he's an artist. He wanted to create the perfect utopia. You know, the heaven on earth. His concept of what utopia was. And, you know, and you look at the outline and the beginning idea was great, you know, and he wanted to pull his people out of poverty and out of all the problems that were going on there, you know, with the monetary system and everything else, much like what we're dealing with now. And, you know, he had some great ideas in the beginning, you know, but as you're saying, further on, the way he went about implementing those ideas of getting rid of everything that was outside of his dream and you know, just kind of went off the deep end.
Absolutely, yep. Yeah. Well, hey, we're evolving. We're evolving in our understanding of who and what we are.
Oh, yeah.
And discovering more and more that we create our own reality, and that's an ongoing discovery. Right?
Yeah, I mean, I've had issues where after a while you get tired of this and you go, you guys, just do something, you know, about this. Get rid of these people. And they go, no, we're just here for healing, you know. They go, sorry, we're just here for healing, you know. We're here to heal the situation. We're not here to, you know, take these guys out or make them, you know.
Right. Yep.
But, they always force you to move to the next level. We've only got about maybe 1 or 2 minutes left. So is there anything you want to leave the audience with?
Well, I would like to invite everybody to read my terrific book called An Invitation to Wonderworld, which you can find at my website on the homepage. The website is Wonder World Online, WonderWorldOnline, WonderWorldOnline.com. And there's some of my videos on there, and I would like to invite the book. The book tells an in-depth story about the theme park, the philosophy behind it, the technology behind it, and takes you through many of the attractions that we've designed for the park. So that would be fun to have people do that. And then we're going to be doing a series of founding workshops, which they can find out by connecting in on that site too.
And we'll put those up on the website as well. We'll put those up on the radio show and links so everybody can go to those and check those out. And you know, it's been a delight talking with you, and I can't wait till you do come up for a visit and see what the potential is here. Would love to get your perspectives on things.
Well, send me an invitation on my email, and also if you send me a link to, if you recorded this and I could get a link to it, I'd appreciate that.
We'll do that. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and heck, we'll have to get you back on because I know there's a lot more to talk about.
Oh, good. Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to meet you, and I am very enamored with all that you've created. Do continue. Never give up.
All right. All right. This is James Gillen. I'm your host. Signing off. Have a great day.